You're listening to the Marketplace Flash Briefing. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We are going to begin today with a very brief rundown of various investments and asset classes here on day six of the war in Ukraine. Equities, that is stocks, both here and in Europe, red all the way around. Asia, a little bit in the green. The Moscow Exchange closed for a second straight day, by the way. Oil, both the U.S. and global benchmarks, up almost 10%, both of them over $105 a barrel at the close, eight-year highs, if you're keeping track. Corn, wheat, oats, soybean, all of them up. Also up, Bitcoin, almost 2% today, 15% in the past 5 days. And it turns out that this war might be a crypto moment. Over the weekend, the official Ukrainian government Twitter account asked for donations of Bitcoin and Ethereum and some other digital currencies. There are reports that that has generated $20 million worth of donations to date. And then the very next day, Ukraine's vice prime minister made a different request, asking global cryptocurrency exchanges to freeze accounts owned by Russian citizens so that Russia can't use crypto to get around all the sanctions. Marketplace's Matt Levin gets us going with the role that crypto is playing in this conflict.
Russia has one of the highest rates of cryptocurrency use in the world, and lately that's likely gone up.
We have seen a spike in seeing rubles being converted into Bitcoin.
Caroline Malcolm is with Chainalysis, which monitors global crypto activity. She says most of that spike is likely everyday Russians fearing bank runs. But some of that activity may be sanctioned oligarchs trying to protect their money. And Lee Reiners at Duke School of Law says that is tough to police.
It's a bit like playing whack-a-mole. Crypto's anonymity and its decentralized nature is always going to pose a challenge when it comes to sanctions compliance.
But at some point, crypto moles have to come up for air and convert digital currency to dollars or euros. That happens at crypto exchanges, those websites that flooded the Super Bowl with ads. And Caroline Malcolm at Chainalysis says they are required to enforce sanctions.
And the U.S. Treasury, for example, which with its sanctions, has made that very, very clear that whether you are the sanctioned entities are holding funds in traditional financial accounts or they're holding them on crypto exchanges, that is sanctioned activity.
But part of the problem is the exchanges themselves, says Duke's Lee Reiners.
You know, frankly, Matt, they don't have the best track record on this front.
Reiner says while some larger U.S.-based exchanges have complied appropriately, it's taken others years to come on board. So what about the Russian state? Could cryptocurrency help unfreeze its hundreds of billions of dollars in foreign reserves? Michael Greenwald is a former Treasury Department official. He says no way.
There's no digital currency platform that is going to help Russia out of this situation right now.
Greenwald is not alone in that sentiment. Still, he thinks Russian officials don't have a lot of other options.
Besides gold and besides their reserves in China, it is digital assets in crypto markets.
The U.S. Treasury has yet to publicly identify the specific crypto accounts it thinks belongs to sanctioned Russian actors. But it might not be long before it does. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Apple said today it's pausing all sales in Russia, the latest in a long and growing list of companies trying to distance themselves from Moscow as the fighting in Ukraine gets worse. Shell and BP, Daimler Truck and General Motors, Hollywood studios and pension funds, liquor stores even, boycotting Russian vodka. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has that whole story.
We've seen wide-scale repudiation of a country by the global business community before. The divestment campaign to protest apartheid in South Africa comes to mind. But this feels different, says Gary Huffbauer at the Peterson Institute.
It's really much bigger and much faster.
While South African divestment took decades, this exodus has happened in a matter of days, and from a starting point of much deeper connections, especially for European companies, he says.
They've seen it as a very promising market. Russia was the place to invest in.
Companies leaving Russia could be worried they'll get caught up in sanctions or that the Russian government could seize their assets. But for many, these decisions seem to go beyond business, says Nico Safos with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
We're seeing European companies be willing to say, I'm done, I'm out, I'm willing to write off the whole thing. I think this just speaks to the psychological impact of this war.
Of course, he says there is a risk once firms pull out, they might never be able to get back in. But for many companies, the risk of alienating the public at home is probably greater, says Daniel Korshan, a marketing professor at Drexel University.
They know that it's something that their customers and employees care really deeply about.
He says expectations for companies to respond to world events have never been higher. And the more that do, the more pressure builds on other business leaders.
They're asking themselves, do I want to be the person who didn't do something?
At least in the case of Russia, he says, there's a much broader consensus than on the domestic social and political issues companies are now expected to weigh in on. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
That's all for today's Flash Briefing. For more news, visit marketplace.org.